It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Beyond the Noise, the podcast series from PR Week. I'm news editor Siobhan Holt and your host today. Today, actually, we have a full studio. I'm joined by our UK editor John Harrington and reporters Evie Barrett and Eliza Radu. Hello, everyone.
Hiya.
Before we begin today's podcast, I quickly want to mention some of our awards coming up in the next few weeks. Firstly, we have the PR Week Global Awards taking place on Wednesday the 15th of May in London. You can still buy tickets, so don't miss out. There's also the Purpose Awards, held in partnership with our sister titles Campaign and Third Sector. The ceremony will take place on Friday the 7th of June at the Londoner Hotel in Leicester Square. Check out the events section of the PR Week website for more information and to book. So yeah, as I said, today we have a full house here in the studio, and that's because we're going to talk about one of the biggest projects created by PR Week's UK editorial team, and that's the Top 150 Consultancies project. But before we jump into this year's key insights and trends, John, can you please explain to our listeners who may not know what the Top 150 project is, what it's all about and what it offers PRs?
Yeah, so for those who don't know, the Top 150 is PR Week's long-standing project looking at the health of the UK PR consultancy market and the big trends. So the main event is the table ranking the 150 biggest agencies by UK PR revenue in the most recent calendar year. We also have separate rankings tables by sector revenue, so things like consumer, corporate, financial, B2B, and there are other tables for things like the biggest agencies outside London, the fastest growing, and so on. So over the years, we've expanded the questionnaire to ask about a range of issues from margins to expansion plans, priority investment areas, diversity, lots of stuff. The whole project is now about 35 to 40 articles, so it's pretty meaty. That's if you count all the features and tables and opinion pieces and so on. It really is a must read for anyone interested in the industry. And we'll be running the articles in stages throughout the whole of May, so stay tuned. It's my slightly long intro, but I think it's worth giving context. So to get into what we learned this year, analysis of the table for 2024, so for the 2023 calendar year, really brings home how tough that year was for many UK agencies. The top line aggregate growth figure across the top 150 was 6.8%. That doesn't sound too bad, but there are a few really important points to make. Firstly, that figure was distorted by mergers and acquisitions activity involving some very large agencies. Go on to M&A later, I think. The second point, growth in 2023 was a little over half that of 2022. And thirdly, and most importantly, growth was actually flat when adjusted for inflation. But that's very unusual. Even at the peak of the cost of living crisis in 2022, that wasn't the case or anywhere near it. What it means is margins were squeezed more than ever in 2023. And it's a story we've heard anecdotally for a long time. We've discussed it on this podcast several times. And we've also seen it in the results of some of the big holding companies. But this really brought it home. So that was one big issue. And it's worth saying that some sectors had more challenges than others as well. I mean, tech is one that people often point to. you know, the tech giants made layoffs and cut their marketing spend last year. And that was reflected in the performance of some tech agencies and the divisions of integrated agencies. Consumer PR budgets were squeezed in general. Financial markets were sluggish. So agencies that rely on transactions had a difficult time. So that's the bad news. And before anyone thinks, why am I bothering? There were several bright spots. So I think it's important to emphasise that.
Give us the good news.
I'll give you the good news. So several agencies did buck the trend. Some agencies, as in each year, some agencies grew really fast. In consumer PR, for example, there are a handful of sort of well-established agencies that strongly outperformed the top 150. And there was notable revival in areas like entertainment and sport in particular. Our research also shows that agency bosses were notably more optimistic about the year ahead than they were when we asked the same questions a year earlier. And you can see this in the results of the top 150 trading tracker as well, which is our sort of monthly sentiment tracker of agencies. So while it's not all sunlit uplands and many agencies still have very serious concerns about the state of play at the moment, there is a sense that clients are spending more. There is a sense that there's more opportunity. And agencies point to things like the probability of a Labour government that some are kind of relatively positive towards, summer of sport ahead, markets returning, to sort of have, if not overly optimistic, at least not entirely pessimistic view on the years ahead. And many hope their investments in things like new client offers around research, creativity and production, many other things, all underpinned by the opportunities of AI, of course, will stand them in good stead. So that's a lot from me. What did the rest of you think about the top 150 overall? What sort of struck you about the top 150 this year overall?
For me, it was the headcount, actually, was quite an interesting figure that cropped up.
Yeah. I mean, I think we should probably make that point that the growth in the top 150 overall was just over 2% in terms of headcount, which when you think about, you know, the year before, it was far, far more. What was it, 14% or thereabouts? So it really shows a huge slowing of growth. Mm. And as you say, redundancies would have had a big impact in that. It's not like nobody is hiring. I mean, I don't think we should go that far.
No. Yeah, they were keeping a close eye on the headcount numbers.
A much closer eye. And I think, you know, some people talk about, have we gone from the great resignation to the great redundancy? I don't think it's quite as straightforward as that. But obviously redundancies have had a big impact on the headcount overall in the sector. And while lots of agencies are making redundancies, not all of them, a lot of them are kind of maybe hiring less bullishly than they were in the previous year, I would say. So there's definitely, it smacks of caution, if nothing else, I think, that figure. So yeah, it's a really good point, actually, because usually we see really big growth in headcount each year. And obviously that figure, that 2-point-something% growth, that also includes the M&A activity that went on.
Yes.
So when they buy the agencies, they also buy the staff.
Yeah, their numbers go
not
up.
Not literally, but... So we need to take that into account as well. So it's not exactly organic growth in headcount, if you like.
What I found most surprising was almost one in three reported that they ended 2023 with fewer employees than the start of the year. So what I'm kind of wondering is what really happened?
I guess with like acquisitions and things like that, you have duplication of roles. So there's probably an element of that kind of not wanting to have excess people, kind of having a skeleton team, kind of the minimum number of people you can have to get the job done in some cases where things are tough.
Yeah.
And we've had reports that that's potentially what's going to happen at Burson with the doubling up of job roles, that they've already put out potential warnings to staff that that could be a situation, so it could still be an issue.
That figure is quite shocking, the one about one in three agencies ended the year with fewer employees than they started. I mean, I think, again, it points to the level of redundancies in the sector, but it could relate to other things as well, you know, roles not being replaced when people leave and maybe hiring freezes. And the top 150 does ask about that. So there'll be some stats on that later on in May.
We'll return to discuss more top 150 trends, but first some quick messages.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And we're back. Each member of the team looked at different trends from the top 150 data, as well as comments, and we'll talk about a few of them now. So, Evie, what did you look
at? I had a look at what agencies were saying about their relationships with clients, and found that a vast majority, so three quarters, said that they thought client demands increased in 2023. But despite that, only one in three surrendered accounts, which I thought was a bit of a contrast. Mm. It seems like we're seeing more scrutiny on agencies to really perform and prove their worth. There's more of an appetite from clients for quick wins, and they want to see concrete results, probably as a result of clients trying to prove value to company bosses. There were multiple comments about reduced client budgets, and a few people said that clients are eager to have more for less. Another point which I hadn't thought about before was the impact of AI on budgets. One agency actually said they'd experienced clients expecting a reduction in costs due to the use of AI tools, which I'm not sure that sounds particularly fair to me, but I'm interested to hear what you guys think.
Well, anonymously, yeah, I've definitely had agency members of staff say to me that they are experiencing that clients are asking how AI is being used, and also as a result then a reducing cost from it. So yeah, I think that's going to be a growing area.
I think it's quite shocking to reduce fees because a company is using AI tools, because they still need to pay the staff that's using those tools. AI can't be used on its own. It always needs some form of supervision.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a naive assumption that these tools are a way to kind of cut corners and be lazy, when actually most people I've spoken to who are really using AI are using it to speed up the sort of simpler tasks and put more effort into things which really need brain power, like creativity and things like that. So yeah, I don't think it's agencies trying to get out of doing work.
Interestingly, some other research for the top 150 found that we asked about AI, and we asked about it the previous year as well, and there's a real notable jump in terms of how much of a priority investment area it is. I mean, it perhaps stands to reason, but I think it was now third in the list of top priorities for investments behind media relations and content creation abilities. So I think that's really telling. And it was quite a lot further down last year. So it really shows, if nothing else, how much the industry is really focusing on it. You know, perhaps we knew that already, but it's interesting to see the stats behind it.
Yeah, and a lot of the results that we've had, stories that we've written, WPP's results just being one example, they are definitely mentioning it a lot more in their comments as an area that they're invested in going forward.
Definitely.
Were there any other areas that you looked at, Evie?
Yeah, so on a bit of a similar vein, I also looked at pitching. We've had a fair bit in the last few months, kind of complaints about the pitch process, and those sort of continued to be mentioned. Things like ghosting, delays in decision making, changing budgets and increased competition. But despite all that, agencies seem to be pitching slightly more than they did the previous year. So the median number of pitches was 21.5, and that was up from 18. One point that stood out to me was CC Group said that a third of their new business opportunities that they'd pitched for didn't end up appointing an agency in the end after going through a competitive process, which I thought was quite shocking. They linked it to kind of being a tough year for tech, but I think more broadly, we've heard a bit about clients sort of maybe not valuing the effort and the time that it takes for an agency to go to pitch and kind of come up with ideas. I think it's easy for a company to just go, oh, let's just see what's out there and just get agencies to pitch for us and then not appoint anyone, when actually that takes so much time from an agency to prepare all that. So I think hopefully we'll start to see more clients realizing how taxing it is. So yeah, as a result of all the complaints kind of around the competitive pitch process, it seems like there could be some changes in the future. A fair few agencies actually said that last year they started to take on work via non-competitive means, so finding new clients organically, whether through referrals and recommendations or by networking and building relationships, which I think is an interesting bit of progression.
It's always the ideal, isn't it? I mean, I don't think anyone actively likes the pitch process. I mean, maybe a few people. Shout out to the people who like the pitch process.
Yeah, good
but,
for you.
Someone has to. But, you know, obviously the ideal is it'll be recommendations, word of mouth and all that sort of stuff. But I think the reality is, particularly if you're a relative newcomer, or it's the type of agency where they have a pitch process, whatever. And maybe it could be a very procurement-led kind of process where that's just what you have to do. Then for those sort of situations, it's inevitable. Actually, the trading tracker for April that we published earlier this week had a sort of an insightful quote from Kath Myers, the MD at Milk and Honey. Kath said, "Has Halloween moved to April? Because the level of ghosting was shocking." So, you know, that's just one comment that sort of illustrates the problem that a lot of people are facing with that. But yeah, huge issue. It's not going to go away.
But people seem to be more vocal about it now, at least, rather than kind of keeping it as a taboo and sweeping it under the rug. So I think progress will come.
As part of the Top 150 project, I focused on trends in mergers and acquisitions. And while in recent months we've seen some big M&A news in the PR industry, one example being BCW and Hill & Knowlton forming Burson, the Top 150 results showed that overall agencies were less keen on making acquisitions over the past 12 months. The data showed that around 25% of agencies in the survey said they'd been approached by a potential buyer. And that figure is slightly lower than in 2022, when it was half, at about 50%. Of the agency bosses who said they'd been approached by companies regarding acquisitions in 2023, one comms chief said they'd received multiple inquiries from local and national firms, as well as one in the US. One boss said they'd been approached more than any other year. And another joke, someone calls us almost every week. We've certainly seen buyers from other countries invest in UK agencies over the past 6 months or so. I mentioned US firms showing interest in agencies there, but more recently, Williams Nicholson received a minority investment from Next Practices Group, which is a US-based firm. But there's also been European interest in the past 12 months. Brands to Life was acquired by a Scandi holding company, and Lansons was snapped up by Team Fana, which is based in Switzerland, for those of you that don't know. But what's all this showing? Well, basically, it's demonstrating that the comms industry is viewed as an important sector for growth by outside investors. And as you mentioned, John, it's been a tough year for many agencies, but it's no surprise that some are looking to gain more financial support, so that they can sort of bolster and work as well across the group. So for example, like Lansons, Team Fana is made up of several comms businesses, so they can use those different services that are in the group, and through that, hopefully get more clients that way.
Yeah, it's a similar thing for Next Practices Group and Williams Nicholson. Yeah.
Another big trend was UK agencies making bolt-on acquisitions over the past 12 months. So we've had many PR companies buying creative firms to bolster their services for clients. So just two examples, Freud's Group bought creative agency Lawless Studio, and MHP Group purchased a creative agency called Studio La Plage, which I think is one of your favourites, isn't it?
Yeah, I love that name.
So yeah, we've had some agencies joining forces with larger companies to allow them to offer more services to clients through partnering, and then, you know, we've had others that are purchasing creative studios. I mean, it's not really a surprise given how tough the market's been. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would. I'm thinking about it. There's, you know, away from the creativity side, which is definitely true, there's been quite a few sort of financial comms agencies that have been snapped up as well.
Mm.
And the most obvious one last year was Tolkien being bought by Teneo.
Yeah, one of the biggest sales of that year, wasn't it?
Yeah. And also you had APCO buying Comarco, financial comms agency, which pretty much doubled their revenue in the UK, incidentally, APCO. So that was a really interesting one. And then, you know, outside of these shores, if you like, there was the investment that was made by private equity firm KKR into FGS Global. So that's private equity groups sort of investing in that WPP network agency. So there's a lot of that going on as well. So I think there's real interest in the financial comms side of things as well. But I sort of think at the moment there's not one type of agency that is necessarily a massive draw over others. I just think it's well-run agencies that can prove their margins and can prove their business strength.
That's going to offer like a footprint into an area that they're really keen to look into. And as you say, if they're really successful in that sector.
Yeah. And this, you know, I wrote this piece about Buchanan going into Burson as a way to sort of give them a really defined financial PR offer. But I've probably spoken about that enough on previous podcasts, but yeah, watch this space with interest. I can certainly imagine there being a lot more M&A over the rest of the year. So one of the things I looked at was UK agencies going overseas. So it kind of follows quite nicely from M&A really. But obviously this is another way to expand your footprint geographically. So we were looking at agencies wanting to open or actually opening overseas, and also opening more offices in the UK. What we found was UK PR agencies are slightly less interested in opening offices overseas now than they were last year, but are marginally keener on planting more flags in the UK. I mean, what is particularly worth focusing on is the places where UK agencies are looking to open. What we found was Europe is increasingly a destination of choice. That was the sort of top region for UK agencies to want to open. And that was followed by the Middle East, North America, then Asia, Africa and Central America. I mean, it's a bit of a reversal. North America was top last year. And although the numbers of agencies looking to open these places isn't huge, I do think it sort of says something. You know, quite a few agencies that are looking to open in continental Europe and in the EU specifically, talk about the need to support the EU clients and also of the opportunities there. I mean, there's another interesting quote on this. Warren Johnson at W said he's seen a huge appetite from our clients to invest in the region in Europe and cited the opportunities of the Paris Olympics coming up quite soon. So I thought that was worth focusing on. And the Middle East, still a popular destination. We've had quite a few stories about openings there. Dubai is a sort of traditional foothold, but increasingly Saudi Arabia. A few stories we've had in recent weeks and months about Saudi Arabia. There's a quote that we've got from Hanover, Middle East, talking about opening in Saudi. John T. Summers there says it's the most significant growth market in the Middle East. And I think a lot of agencies are really focused on Saudi Arabia. So we'll probably see more of that in the months ahead, I would have thought. So, yeah, any thoughts on this, on destinations where UK agencies want to open a new base?
I almost would have thought that Middle East would have been ahead of Europe because it seems like there's so much opportunity there at the moment. Although I guess, like you were saying, with the Olympics in Paris, it kind of makes sense and because it's sort of closer in terms of building a network. But yeah, the Middle East definitely seems to be sort of up and coming in terms of the comms industry.
While speaking to agencies over in the Middle East, I feel like it's a really interesting market with a lot of untapped potential. I think a lot of UK agencies would really benefit from going over there and kind of looking at a new market from a new lens. But I've also noticed a lot of agencies opening up outside of London as well.
We do look at where agencies plan to open in the UK. We asked if they plan to do that or have done so already this year. 7.2%, for what it's worth, answered in the affirmative. That's a slightly higher proportion than last year, which was 6.2%. I mean, it's not a huge difference. There's certainly still interest. Northwest England incidentally became the most popular location for agencies looking to open new offices in the UK in 2023. For 2024, guess what's number one?
Scotland.
No, London.
London. Yeah, but don't get too excited. There's only five agencies targeting the capital. I mean, one of the questions I asked is, are we seeing a kind of surge of regional agencies making a sort of physical move into the capital? Not really, is my analysis. quite a lot of them are sort of moving offices to another part of London to expand or for various other reasons. So there are obviously other reasons for that. Although a couple of them from outside London are planning to open here as well. So there you go.
It's really interesting. I know from some of our stories, we've definitely had agencies moving to Amsterdam. That seems to be quite a popular European hotspot, doesn't it, that we've written a lot about.
Definitely.
And I agree with Eliza that I think the Middle East is just such an untapped potential area and the stories that we're getting from it. I mean, for those that don't know, PR Week UK team covers the Middle East website. So that's why we have a bit more insider knowledge on the region.
We do, and we have a dedicated Middle East bulletin.
We do, yeah.
Please. I recommend people signing up
for that. Please do. Yeah, and please send us your stories as well, if you're an agency that covers that region. But yeah, it's definitely, I think it's great for the sector that there's this, you know, so much potential out there for them.
There is. And Amsterdam, I'll go back to Amsterdam, actually. That is a particularly sort of telling one because Amsterdam is known very much as a sort of centre of creativity, I think. Mm. And it really seems to be the sort of the creative comms agencies that are opening there.
Yeah.
Which I think sort of shows that they're very much in that world and that the sort of smaller and mid-size creative comms agencies are really sort of seeing an advantage of spreading their wings to another hub of creativity in the continent of Europe. So
and a lot seem to cite it as post-Brexit as a potential reason as well for the move. But yeah, I think you're right. I think it's just a big area for them to approach.
Yeah, good point about Brexit as well.
I think I wonder if some of the regional decisions are based on that as well, that maybe because of cutbacks they had to reduce teams that maybe they had working remotely, and now it's sort of getting back to that level a couple of years on, you know, that they're putting bases back in cities like Manchester or Liverpool. I just wonder if that's potentially another factor.
I've noticed a lot of people opening up in like Sheffield and like random areas of like the UK that to me wouldn't seem like a busy market, but I always forget that the best PR is always implemented locally. So I feel like some people kind of want to move into that market to tap into their audience.
We have only just started to scratch the surface of the top 150 survey in today's podcast. The full table ranking of the top 150 biggest agencies is available now. Simply visit prweek.com. And throughout May, we will publish separate rankings for different sectors. All the top 150 articles are exclusive to PR Week subscribers, so make sure you're signed up to the bulletins to receive the info direct to your inbox. That's all for this week's episode. Thanks to John, Eliza and Evie. Before we finish, I'd like to quickly promote the PR Week UK Awards. That's our biggest awards event of the year. Get your entries in today. And if you've enjoyed today's episode, please leave a review wherever you access PR Week's podcasts. Beyond the Noise goes live every 2 weeks, but in the meantime, you can check out our shorter news-based podcast, Noise in Brief, which comes out next week. Thank you for listening. Bye for now.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out at the French Open for a chance to win a Grand Slam title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. See the action unfold as legends fight for glory and new rivalries emerge. Daily live coverage begins Monday, May 20th, with match replays on demand so you never miss a moment. From the first serve to the final point, Roland Garros promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.